the question, if you remember, was put, how come they eat and we make a bracha for the food that they're eating in Eretz Israel? So that's why they said, you know, that we should change it around. That in Babylonia we should say Alor Tzvei Peros, and in Eretz Israel we should say Alor Tzvei Peros. This was suggested, if you remember, you know, by Rab Chisdo and Rab Yochanan, according to the version of Rab Nachman by Yitzchak. All right. So Mashma is she'ein nired l'makshem. Seems to me, he says, that the person who was asking the kasha, she'yedabru ha'moroyim de Babel, that the sages, you know, the Amoroyim in Babylonia, would decide b'shvil b'nei Eretz Yisrael, that they should make a decision for what the people in Eretz Yisrael do. It's not right, he says. Eretz Yisrael is entitled to make its scholars and make its own decision. Babylon should do it. So kikach, yeah. Yeah, we're doing the Tosfos, right. The last Tosfos on the page.
Yeah.
Okay. Kikach perish Rabbeinu Tam, because this is what Rabbeinu Tam said, Gabe le'olam yisa isha v'yachakach yumo Torah, right? There's a difference of opinion in Kedushin as to whether a person should first get married and then learn Torah. The Tanach Rite, but another authority says, yumo Torah, first learn Torah, v'yachakach yisa isha, and after that you get married, okay? Well, Matzik, and at that point, during the course of the discussion, they said it's hol lon v'hol ahu. In Eretz Israel, they paskin one way, namely, get married and then learn, whereas in Babylonia, v'hol ahu, right? Or maybe the other way around, because lon normally normally means Babylon, right? So in Babylonia, we suggest that first they get married and then learn, and in Eretz Israel, they suggest that first you learn and then you
get married.
Okay. And Rabbeinu Tam there explained that Rabbi Yochanan, who of course is an Eretz Yisrael authority, was talking about his own students, Shehoyu Mibavel, who had come from Babylonia. The Shema Hocha Kimle Mamakshan Ba'isashah, because under these circumstances it is possible then that Sheomer Rav Chisdo Homilza, that Rav Chisdo said the following, and he said, Lohoya Lefonov Shum Tamid Meretz Yisrael. Maybe he did not have, when he said what he did in Babylonia, he did not have any students that come to Babylonia from Meretz Yisrael. V'chein lo shum tamid in Babel, v'chein Rabbi Yochanan. And maybe Rabbi Yochanan at the time when he said what he said, did not have a student in Babylonia. All right. At any rate, this is not germane, but I want to get to the end of this over here. The Yim Kain, lo hoya master. So, Rav Chisdo shoim at Babel, him at Mevavel. So, for this reason, Tosfos says, if Rav Chisdo made a statement, it would only apply to where? To Babylonia.
Yeah.
All right. And what did Rav Chisdo say, according to the latter interpretation, that you say, Allah, it's our parents. So, that applies to Babylonia. And that's why he asked the following question. He would say, how did the people of Babylonia say? They say, how could they say that? Because Peroseh would imply Eretz Israel, the land and its fruit. Who are we praising? We're praising Eretz Israel. The fruit that we're praising is fruits with which Eretz Israel is blessed. So that therefore, in Babylonia, it's not appropriate, he says. So, Mashma, the Kai, Dafkal, Peroseh, Eretz Israel. And the people in Babylonia were not eating it. All right. So, therefore, Tosfos comes to the following conclusion. All right. This is as far as Tosfos goes over here. Next week, a mitzvah will continue. But the law actually is, then, that we always say, Allah is our payrolls, and in Eretz Israel, they have a choice. Either they can do what the Gemara says over here, like Rabbi Yochanan, according to the latter interpretation, that you say, Alor Tzviel Peres Seva, then it's considered the more correct version. But if you say, Alor Tzviel Peres, like everybody else throughout the world, then you answer with that too.
Okay. Let me ask a question.
Yes.
Coming back to the,
yeah.
If you're from Babylonia, you get married first, then you study. But
yes.
If you come from Eretz Israel, then you study first and get married.
Yeah.
So what do they follow today here in this country?
The answer is that you have both operating side by side. You have operating both side by side. I remember when, let me see, I gotta get going. Chofetz Chaim. Okay, remember that my son-in-law studied there many, many years. First he graduated YU and studied over there. But then he wound up in Chofetz Chaim eventually, as did many of his friends, okay? So in Chofetz Chaim, they were encouraging the boys to study and to marry only in a later period. But the realities of the situation are that many of the boys did not want to wait year after year after year before getting married for various reasons. I don't have to tell you, reach a certain stage of maturity, right? Biological necessity, whatever it may be. So at that particular point, boys began marrying, and eventually the yeshiva got used to the idea too. Now, in the kollel, normally they take in only married people. Normally.
Okay.
Now
on Mem Dalad, Amid Beis. Okay.
Last week, of course, when we did the first side, not only did we read the text, but we also did quite a bit of Tosfos in order to see what was happening. Okay. So, Omer Rav Yitzchak Bar Avidimi, Mishum Rabbeinu. Rav Yitzchak, the son of Avidimi, said in the name of Rebbe, who is Rabbeinu in this case, our Rebbe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Al Habeya, for an egg, Yalmine Kupro, or for eating different types of meat, this is how Rashi explains the word Kupro. So, betchilo, before you begin to eat it, nevore shahakol. Then the bracha that you make for eating an egg or eating meat is shahakol. The lipso, and what do you say afterwards? And you say, very nefoshes rabbas. The chule, in other words, etc. Okay. Alright, so, that's fine. Of course, I don't have to tell you that this is the halacha to clean up. This is the brachas that we have to make before and after eating either an egg or a piece of meat. Okay. Avol, and now he continues and he says, but yarka lo, if you eat vegetables, no. Now what is the no? So Rashi explains the no is sorek ruche achreva, that you don't have to make a bracha after eating a vegetable, but you do have to, of course, make a bracha before you eat it, because we already learned that you should not enjoy anything in this world without making a bracha. So you make a bracha. After all, the Mishnah too, I said specifically that if you eat vegetables, it's peros ha'adama, right? So we have to say bori pri ha'adama. No question about that. All right. But according to Rav Yitzchak Avidimi, so he says that you do not have to recite a bracha after eating vegetables. It's needless to say, not everybody's in agreement with him, and so along comes Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak Omar Afilu Yarka. Rav Yitzchak says, yes, you do have to make a bracha after eating vegetables, avol mayolo, but not after drinking water. Rav Papa Omar, but Rav Papa said, Afilu Maya. Even if you drink water, you still have to make a bracha afterwards. And of course, what is the bracha that we make, whether it's after vegetables or after water? It's very nefoshes. The same bracha that you say after the meat or the egg and so on. Or, of course, anything which does not actually grow from the ground, right?
Yeah.
Or is not, you know, bread grows from the ground.
Unless
wine
it's
grows
wine,
from the ground.
Then you say,
but they have their own special brachas. Yeah. Milk, obviously, is also, should be subject to the same rule that you say shahakal before, and very nefoshes afterwards. Right. Okay. Marzutra, all about Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. So, Marzutra did the same as Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi did. In other words, what? That you have to make, the bracha after eating meat or egg, right? But not after vegetables. Okay, so he followed his, his point of view, okay? Rav Shimi Barashi, Avad Rabbi Yitzchak. And Rav Shimi Bar Yashi, he did even as Rabbi Yitzchak had said. What did Rabbi Yitzchak say? Rabbi Yitzchak said that after vegetables you do have to make the bracha, but not after water.
No, it's two and two.
Yeah. Okay. So it's ganz fine. We see Monoch, and how can you remember which one said, this? You have to remember, again, this goes back yet to the days before they actually wrote a text of the Gemara. So they had to remember, you know, who was the author, who had said this, and who had said the other one. Mm-hmm. So he gave a simon. A simon, as we even know what it means.
The mark.
A hint, the mark, whatever you wish, okay? He said, chad ketrei, v'trei kechad. In other words, the one who is by himself, in this case would be like Yitzchak, so he agrees like, you know, Yitzchak Barav, excuse me. He would agree with
Rav Papa.
With Rav Papa. Well, actually, we'll see what Rashi has to say. Trei dechad. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Chad ketrei. All right. You take a look on this. The first line, second line of Rashi over there.
Yeah.
So he identifies. He says Mar Zutra. You know, the last one who was mentioned over here. It says that he did like Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi, right? So it says Marzutra Shahuskar Khan Yochid below Shemovid. Marzutra was mentioned over here alone without the name of his father. So whose system did he follow? So Ovid Kirav Yitzchak Bar Dimi Shahuskar Bishmosh Uvishemoviv. He did like the two. What two? In other words, Rav Yitzchak, whose name is mentioned, but also the name of his father, okay? Whereas, Trei Kechad, Ma Barav Ashi, Shehuz Gabishmo, in other words, he is mentioned and he has not only his name, Mar, but also Barav Ashi, so he's of a shame of him. So, Ovid, Rabbi Yitzchak, Shehuz Gabishmo, he did the way Rabbi Yitzchak did, who was mentioned only by one name. Okay. So, God's fine. All right. Now, Omer Rav Ashi said, Ano Zimno. He says, you know, sometimes, the Chimat Charno, if I remember, so he says, Abino Kekutl. I do in accordance with what everybody says. Meaning what? Meaning that I give a bracha, I say the bracha beforehand, and I also say a bracha afterwards too, regardless of whether it is asked in the first
vegetables
opinion,
or
right, for meat and eggs, or the second opinion, which included vegetables, or the third opinion, which even included water. All right. Now, at this particular point, they bring in a Mishnah, and this Mishnah is found way another end of the Talmud, and Sefer Nida. It says over there, Tanan. We have over here now a generalization which says that wherever a bracha is required afterwards, then we must make a bracha before it. Okay? The yesh, but there are sheton bracha lefonov, there are circumstances where you have to recite a bracha beforehand, but the ein ton bracha liachrov. You do not recite a bracha afterwards. You're not required to recite a bracha afterwards. So now they try to trace down, you know, what is this particular Mishnah talking about? So they say, Mishnah mal Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avidimi. Okay, if we follow the opinion that was mentioned at the top of the page about Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avidimi, who said what? That for meat and eggs, you do say a bracha afterwards, right? So la fuke yarko, then that excludes vegetables, because according to him, you do not have to say it after eating vegetables, right? The Rav Yitzchak, as far as the second opinion which was quoted over there, it's la fuke mayo. We can understand Rav Yitzchak too, where he said, you know, that for vegetables you do have to make a bracha afterwards, for eggs and meat you do have to make a bracha, but not for water, he said. So that excludes water. Ela the Rav Papa, but let's get back to Rav Papa, who says that you should do according to everybody, because Rav Papa ma'afilu maya, right? That the Rav Papa said even for water you have to make a bracha before and after. So in this case, then what in accordance with the Mishnah will be excluded, since the Mishnah says that there are times when you make a bracha beforehand, but you don't make a bracha afterwards. So what kind of a case would be involved in that case? La fuke mai, what does it exclude, right? So the Gemara answers, La fuke mitzvos. It's in order to exclude a bracha that you make for a mitzvah. In other words, any bracha that you make, Baruch Atvar Hashem, Lekin Mokhiloh, Mashal Rishonim, Mitzvah Yisov, Etzivonu, whatever it may be, right? So we must make that bracha beforehand, but we do not make a bracha afterwards, right? In other words, if let's say, Lahadlik Nirsh on Shabbos, okay? We don't make a bracha after that.
Right.
You have to make the bracha beforehand. Al Netilas Lulav. You have to make the bracha beforehand, but there is no bracha that you make afterwards, okay? And the same thing for the shofar, and you name it, okay? So that's where. Or, for example, Al Mitzvah Sitzis, right? Or Lahaniach Tfilin. Or Al Mitzvah Tfilin. All these brachas are, you know, Birchos HaMitzvahs, the brachas that we have to make as we're about to fulfill a mitzvah.
Right.
Okay. But in none of these cases do we have a bracha that is recited afterwards. Okay?
Can I just ask a grammatical question?
Of course.
The word here, lidon, which normally, I guess we'd use it almost like a legal sense for pleading or pleas or cause.
Yeah, where do you see? Which line are you talking about?
Well, shetaon?
Oh, shetaon.
Ah,
okay. Which literally is loaded with, or which requires, okay.
Oh, okay, what requires,
yeah.
All right.
But
okay.
You're right that in a court of law, then the toein is the person who is making a complaint.
Right,
exactly.
Claimant. Yeah.
Yes, claimant or the person who is making the complaint, and so that's the toein. Yeah. And the ta'un, then in that case, in the legal sense, would be that somebody, you know, who's being accused.
Well, ta'un sometimes is a plea or a pleading.
Ta'no.
Well, that's
yeah,
like a
right.
Cause or action, but
right.
The actual pleading.
Well, the pleading,
that
right, right. There's a verb, right, a verbal noun, correct. Yeah. So it's all from the same root.
Okay.
Originally,
sorry,
the root meant, you know, to be loaded.
Right, okay.
That's the original. But the idea is, you know, that it's loaded with a bracha. In other words, it means that it requires a bracha.
Also, if a guy drinks too much bracha, they use that term too.
Yeah, right, it's also loaded.
Oh, yeah?
So for that, we have other words like shikor.
Shikor is a Yiddish word.
It's a Hebrew word.
Like here. It's
a good Hebrew word. I maintain that most of the good words in Yiddish come from Hebrew.
Okay.
Have a chance in another couple of weeks to be right in the middle of a Yiddishist, sort of like an elder hostel or whatever, except it's not just for older people. The rabbi persuaded the National Jewish Book Center they have a week up at Mount Holyoke College. It's either the second or third year that they're doing it. So we persuaded them to go kosher this year. You know, generally speaking, the Yiddishists are not too particular about kosher, okay? But he persuaded them to go kosher. So naturally, I'm the one, you know, who's... I have to do the dirty work over there.
Elected to be the mashgiach.
I have to be the mashgiach over there. First, I have to make sure that we kosher the place and everything else and so on. So I'm going to have a couple of headaches.
So you'll be paid back by being in the middle of a lot of Yiddish conversation.
Yeah, that's one thing. The other thing, too, there's a certain feeling that I have that if I make it possible for close to 200 people who would be eating treif otherwise to eat kosher, then there is a value in it.
Right.
So that starts...
A whole week, is it?
Starts a week from Sunday, yeah.
So we won't
be up there.
So we won't see you on next
Sunday? No, that Wednesday night I would not be able to make it. And in fact, I'm going to have difficulty getting back and forth between Springfield and Mount Holyoke, you know.
Oh, they won't provide living quarters for you?
Yeah, they're giving me a place where Ann and I could stay.
When is that?
That begins a week from Sunday. Starts a week from Sunday and goes through the following Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to be gone that week too.
So next week
we'll
still meet.
Are they going to have classes of kind?
I'm sure there'll be lectures and things like that, sing-alongs and so on. Yeah, I guess. They promised to send me a program so that I'll have some idea of what it's involved.
I'd be interested.
I happen to like Yiddish.
Yeah, it's a very big headache, but I hope that it's worth all the effort, you know, as we would say in Mamelosh, in the Tircha.
That's a Hebrew word.
Of course, it's a good Hebrew word. That's why I say all the good Hebrew words are the basis of good Yiddish words. Occasionally you find a few Yiddish words that it's hard to find the exact equivalent in Hebrew.
Well, for blanche,
that yeah, that's the word that occurs to me. Right.
It depends on the area of Europe that the Yiddish comes from. That's all
right.
Because the people who came from Poland used some Polish words.
Yes.
And people come from Hungary or Romania use some Hungarian or Romanian words.
Yeah.
They mix them together. Just like if I remember my grandmother used to talk, she talked some words in Yiddish and some words in English, like
yeah.
Close the window, you know?
Right,
I'm off
right.
The window.
Of course,
you know?
It's good American Yiddish. You know, I wouldn't hesitate to say the same thing, even though I know that the word for a window is offensive.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
But. I'm off the wind.
Yeah, right.
This is what I heard.
Yiddish is a jargon, really. But
yeah.
There is pure Yiddish, though.
Yes, there is.
I listened to it on WEBD out of New York. And,
to me it sounds a little bit stilted, yeah. But I do like to listen to the news in Yiddish, too, if I have a chance. If Hen lets me get... she doesn't bug me at that moment.
Okay,
let me get by. All right. So far we've learned that for the bracha over the mitzvahs, right? There is a case where we make a bracha beforehand, but there is no bracha that follows it. Now, all of a sudden, the Gemara now says, well, hold on. I can tell you that there is a custom in Eretz Yisrael with the name Aroba. And to those people who live in the Ma'arava, in other words, in the West Land, which is Eretz Yisrael, as compared to Babylonia. So in other words, in Eretz Yisrael, you know what? It says, the boss of the Mesalkei Tfilaihu, Mevorchei. After they took off their tefillin, they would make a bracha. And what is the bracha? Okay, what is Aleph Kuf Beis Vav?
Aleph Kuf.
See if we can beat these Russian tables with these initials.
After the Kufan, Asher, Kadon.
You're on the right track.
I know I'm on the right track. I can't get
you're on the right track.
Station.
Asher, Kuf, Beis Vav.
I'm sure we all have that.
Asher Kedishonu B'Mitzvah Tzivonu.
You got it.
Asher Kedishonu B'Mitzvah Tzivonu.
Asher Kedishonu B'Mitzvah Tzivonu. Right?
Whatever it is.
The Shmorchu Kav, it says over here.
Doesn't he get Shmorchu Christ? I mean, like they have on Wheel of Fortune.
I got my prize. Be here tonight.
So in Eretz Yisrael then, they had the custom of when they took off the tefillin, they again made a bracha, and the bracha is that they praise God who commanded us with his commandments, who sanctified us with his commandments, right? And commanded us to observe his statutes. Now, of course, what is the observe the statutes? Well, obviously it means, you know, not only as far as wearing tefillin is concerned, but in general, tefillin are to lead us into
other
the performance of other mitzvahs, and so therefore they made this bracha. All right, let's take a look at this particular point at the two tefillin that we have on the page, and then we'll continue with the rest of the text over here. Okay?
Okay.
All right. First of all, if you remember, it says Avidno Kekubu. We do like all of them, okay? In other words, for bread, for meat, for eggs, for vegetables, for water even, right?
Right.
We say not only the bracha beforehand, but we also have to say the bracha afterwards. Okay. We're in the Foshas Rodas Tesvot. Okay. And we do exactly as what Rashi suggests that we do. The Barachinin Bosavaya, Bosayarko, Bari Nefoshes Rabbis. That we recite after water and after vegetables and say Bari Nefoshes Rabbis. Okay, very short taste, but of course this confirms the practice that we follow
today.
To this very day. Okay? Now, taste latches on to what we just learned about in Eretz Yisrael, right? With the name Arova, in Eretz Yisrael, he says, the Mavorchin Hochi, Bosso, and then follow, make the following broccoli. He says, "Va'anan lo abdinan kibnei ma'arava." No, we do not, he say, follow the practice of the people of Eretz Yisrael that I mentioned over here. The Dabko Leditu Shoya Darkam Salkam Balailo Shaita Barakho Delishma Kuka. He says, because for them, Dabka, in other words, precisely or exactly or only for them, right? Only for them does this situation exist, because their custom was to take off their tefillin at night.
Oh,
in other words, they wore it all day long. They wore their tefillin. Of course, if they had to go to the bathroom, this we learned, if you remember, in the second parak, that in that particular case, so they have to take them off, put them in a place where it can be kept safely, and then they put them on again after they had done what they had to do. Okay. So, it says, for them, Shaycha Bracha Delishma Kukav. For them, it is appropriate then to make the Bracha of, to observe, you know, his statutes. Kedichsiv, as it is written, Mishom Harto Esach Kukav, Azos Namuado, Miyomim Yomimo. This, if you remember, is in reference to what? It's actually in reference to two things. But this is from the passage that comes to the Torah in what we call Kadosh Li Kol Bechor. If you remember, this is the 13th chapter of Exodus, and there they deal with two things.
Okay,
it's the end of Parsha Bo. The end of Parsha Bo. And there it deals with two things. One is to keep Shabbos, excuse me, to keep Pesach. Because there we have the idea of Lihigarat or Levindcho, the Yamabule Mor, and also mentions, you know, that we're not allowed to have any Seor, Chometz, etc., etc., you know, during the days of Pesach. But then it also mentions what? You are to put on the tefillin on your head and also on your arm and on your head, and it should be for a memorial to you. So there the word chukah as a statute, this is to be a statute, mi yomim, yomimo. Now what is yomim actually? It's the plural of the word yom, right? So that therefore they followed literally the fact that during the daytime they wore tefillin continually. And they were fulfilling the mitzvah in accordance with what the Torah says, Mishabartas Hakazos Namoadomio. Aval Onu, but in our case, Shemisalkin Nosim Bahatsiha Yom, or Filo Nisalkum Balaila, Lo Shaya Fuka. He says, in our case, where, for example, we take off our tefillin in the middle of the day. In other words, let's say, even if we wear tefillin, you know, to daven and to study in the base medrash, but still, eventually, we normally take off our tefillin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, Tosfos says, even if we personally kept it on until the nighttime, our tefillin is salkim balayla, lo shaya chukah. To us, this idea does not apply. Okay? The dafka the didhu. Because it applied only to them, because sabre, because they thought laila loves man tefillin hu. Right? They had the opinion that night is not a time for wearing tefillin. Umi yomim yomimo, and therefore, why does the pasuk say mi yomim yomimo? It says also mi yutei lailos. The fact that it says from day to day, you know, day after day, this is in order to exclude the wearing of tefillin at night. So shaychad brocha dechukah. Then in that case, it is appropriate to make the bracha of, you know, we praise God, Asher Gershom Sosov Tzivano, Lishmor Chukot, right? That we should keep his statutes. Okay. Aval Anan, but we, the Kaim alone, we have the opinion, the Lailos Man Tefillin, who, right? That night is not the time for wearing tefillin. Va'anan, Misimim haposek v'shamato hafuko. So what do we apply the posek v'shamato hafuko? Says we apply it to Pesach. In other words, to the law concerning Pesach. Okay. Now why don't we wear tefillin at night? This is what Tosfos wants to know now. Okay? So he says, Mipnei shemo yofiach bohen. Right? The answer is because we may give off bodily odors while we're wearing tefillin. So that's why we take it off. Okay? So, afilu namtin salkanat halaylo,
lo mevarchin. Even if we were to wait, therefore, to take off our tefillin until nighttime, we still would not recite this bracha. Apol gav de anan kaim en lon. Even though we do hold the opinion that Shabbos v'yontav lavs man tefillin, right? That Shabbos and Yontav are not a time for putting on tefillin. So afilu hochi. So even so, lo mevarchin. Nevertheless, we do not make a bracha afterwards, right? The dafka the didhu, because that would apply only to them, the svilahu chuka, because they have the opinion, you know, that this is a chuka, this is a statue to wear tefillin, chuka kai. At tefillin, mevorachim. All right, now Beseda, it says in Shadok,
why did the, I guess you say back with the ancients, why did they wear the tefillin at night? What was their reason?
Well, they took it off at night eventually. They did take it off at night eventually.
Uh-huh.
But nevertheless, you see, what he's saying is, since they have the opinion that it's an Eretz Yisrael, and stuff, of course, about in those days, the scholars of Eretz Yisrael, their opinion was that at night you did not wear tefillin. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what are they based on? They're based on the Shomatas of Kazos, Miyomim Nomimo, right?
Okay.
That this applies only to daytime, but the entire day we have to wear it. Okay.
Okay.
But in Bavel, and of course certainly in France where Tosfos was written, and Germany and all the other countries, the custom had already developed to do what? To take off tefillin in the morning. Okay? And even if some had the, for example, you know, there were Rosh Hashivas in Europe, maybe even the United States, but particularly in Europe, who would wear their tefillin all day long. Okay? They did. But still, why should they not be required to make this bracha? The answer is because it's not the common practice. And why don't we wear it? So he says, the reason why we don't wear it at night,
we fulfill the mitzvah by keeping Pesach.
No.
Yeah, what he's saying is as follows. Okay, why don't we wear it at night?
Oh.
Because we're liable to do things that are not appropriate to the wearing of tefillin at night. Okay? When we go to bed or something like that.
They will wear it all night long. They will wear it all night long.
Theoretically, but then no. I mean, obviously nobody's doing it. But theoretically, it would have been possible, right? But we don't do it, he says, because you don't want to do shmutzik things, you know, wearing tefillin. Okay. So therefore, what do we do with the pasuk v'shamartos achukazos? This is getting back to, you know, how do we understand that? So we understand that in reference to keeping Pesach with all the various laws. Okay. So this is what he's saying. Okay. All right. Now he adds one more thing. He says, "V'seda, and you should also know shaharei in hunami lohi mevork nilat tefillin hudayim." They too did not make a bracha after everything, you know, which applied to the mitzvahs, only to tefillin. Mishum dechsi behu chukah, because there it is written the word chukah. Avol ashor mitzvahs, but as far as other mitzvahs is concerned, kigoyin tzitzis, the lulav, the sukkah, lo hayim mevorchim. They did not make a bracha afterwards. They only made a bracha before, but not afterwards. Okay. And then he adds simply the kosher to have a motzah the shenuyah hochel apuk yeshor mitzvahs afilin the name of the difficulty he finds over here is simply that they might have mentioned that even, you know, the people in Eretz Yisrael say that for the various brachas that you make for the mitzvahs, you only make it before and not after, right, with the exception of the tefillin. But that wasn't mentioned over here. It's just the alright, so now getting back, okay. So the Gemara wants to know, okay, in Eretz Yisrael, we see that they do make a bracha after one mitzvah anyway. What mitzvah is it? Taking off the tefillin. Okay. So the question is, La Fuke Mai? So for them, what does this general practice that we say, that you make a bracha beforehand but not afterwards apply, what would that apply to? So he says, La Fuki Rechoni, says that would apply to the fragrant odors that we already mentioned, that when you smell something which is fragrant, you have to make a bracha beforehand. But do we make a bracha afterwards after smelling of fragrant spices or something like that? No.
It's only for the foods that we eat.
Only on Abdullah.
Huh?
Only on Abdullah.
Yeah, but even then we don't make a brocha after smelling it. For example, you make a brocha. Okay, we're talking about Abdullah. Let's get back to that for a moment. All right? Now, Abdullah, it consists of three brochas.
Right.
Okay? Four brochas to be exact. The first brocha is, of course, right? Bori Priya Gofen. All right. Why? Because you're making it over wine. Okay, good. Next one is Bori Minim Bisamim. Okay, so that's for the spices. The third one is Bori Miori Hoesh. All right, we thank God for having created the light that you know that fire gives us. Okay,
there's another bracha.
And then the fourth bracha is, of course, Amadu and Korin Kohol, etc., etc. Okay, now I ask you the following question. We drink the wine. Are we required to make a bracha after the drinking of the wine?
No.
No.
The answer is yes. If you drink a cup of wine, you have to make a bracha. What bracha do we make? Ala Gefi or Priya Gefen?
Yeah, you, the
okay.
The
so you're expected to make the bracha Ala Gefi or Priya Gefen. Okay.
So if you drink the wine for Abdullah,
yeah.
you'd have to say
Ala Gefi or Priya
Gefen.
Priya Gefen. That's what you have to say. Yeah. Okay. But you're not making a brocha for the spices. Only made the brocha before for the spice or for the fire, but not afterwards. There's nothing over there, okay? But nevertheless, when we drink the cup of wine, we're expected then to make the brocha achron, as we would say. In other words, the brocha that they call Meyed Shalosh, you know, that they spoke about. Yeah, so that you have to make. What if, for example, you chose to make Havdalah not over wine, but you chose to make it over schnapps, let's say, or over beer? Because according to the law, you can make it over anything which is considered Sheikhar Hamedina, which means a beverage that is accepted as being a normally drunk beverage. I'm not talking about water, but I'm talking about something that has a little more potency to it, okay? So you can make Havdol over any of that too. You can make it over beer, you can make it over schnapps, and of course, what bracha would you have to make afterwards? We're in the first shelter, exactly. But you're required to make a bracha for that, because that's food.
And nobody does it.
That's food. Nobody does it. Fact that nobody does it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done.
Okay, but then you mean we're not following the halacha here?
We're not following, we're not carrying it out the way it should be done. Because here in Shul, if you notice, the rabbi drinks, he doesn't drink the whole cup of wine anyway, he just drinks a sip or something like that, okay? Alright. But at home, you're expected to drink the cup of wine by yourself.
Or whatever
it
is.
Or it's beer or whatever it may be, right, exactly. You're expected to do that by yourself, okay? So the person who makes Abdullah should make also then a bracha after having drunk that cup. Okay.
I knew it.
So now we keep on learning new halachas every day.
So if the rabbi drinks more than 2/3 of a cup of wine,
he should make a bracha. Should make a bracha. Definitely.
You guys watch him Saturday.
Hey, that's why they probably got legal by giving it to a child.
Yeah, well, that's one way also. One of the basic reasons for giving it to a child is also simply the fact that you know you're going to make it at home. Yeah. So that's the reason why they give it to the children.
And say brains in the head, money in the pocket.
Okay. Omer Rabbi Yonai, Omer Rabbi. Okay, Rabbi Yonai said the name of Rab, but more likely it's Rabbi. When you say Aleph Reish, you don't know whether it's Rav or Rebbe, okay? Unless you figure out from the context or something like that. All right. Anyway, he says, I'm getting a little hoarse, so here we are. Okay. Says, Kol Shehu Beitzo, Beitzo Toiv Mimeno. Now they're not talking about brachas. Now they're talking about food value. Eggs. Okay? He says, whatever food is the size of a beitzah,
egg.
Right, it's the size of an egg. Remember that this is considered by some to be the minimum amount of food that you should eat, which requires
kezias
afterwards. Right. Well, there's a difference of opinion whether it's a kezias, which of course is a smaller size,
like the size of an olive,
right, or a kebeitzah. which is a larger size. Okay, so he says, if you eat a piece of food which is the size of a beitza, the size of the, you know, an egg, so he says beitza to be many. He says, you want to know something? He says, an egg is better than that food. Eat an egg better. Obviously, he had not heard about cholesterol.
Sounds like Jewish philosophy.
The Vikings are Yiddish mamas, you know. After all, I remember I used to eat an egg religiously every morning before I went to school.
Yeah.
No such
See,
thing.
He's full of grouse. Your mother was right.
Yeah. And for years, I mean, my wife, you know, we always had an egg in the morning.
Sure.
Yeah. But with the cholesterol score, scare, you know, so we started to cut down the eggs. All right. But Rabbi Yana, it's a good thing. It's a good food. If you have a choice between eating some other food which is the size of a beitza, eat an egg then. Okay. Kiyosa Rabin, when Rabin came, again, remember, he came from Eretz Yisrael, he came to Babylonia and reported what he had heard. So Omar, he says, you know what? When it comes to eggs, he says, Tava be'osa migulgolto mishisa kaisa sultan. He says that an egg which is migulgolta, or migulgelis, as we'll see in a moment, which means it's soft, but it has been heated enough, you know, to give it a little time. And
I mean, soft-boiled.
Sort of like soft-boiled, except that Rashi explains that actually they used to then broil it a little bit.
Broil it.
Yeah, they would broil it a little bit. Okay? So he says, an egg which is soft and broiled is better than 6 kase is some sort of a measure of fine flour. In other words, if you have your choice between, let's say, a piece of cake made of the finest flour and an egg, better eat an egg. Okay. Kiyosa Rabdimi, when Rabdimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported as follows. He said, Omar, Tova Biyosa Migugolto, Mishisa, right? In other words, an egg which is lightly burned and soft yet, that's better than, as we said before, 6 kaises of fine flour. Mituyotso, the arba, and if it is already broiled more or fried more, in other words, not fried really, but hardened more, okay, then that's better than 4. And mevulsholto, if it's absolutely hard boiled, then in that case, kolshehu, right, kibetza, beitza to a minute. If it is boiled at all, then any kind of food, you know, which is the size of beitza, the egg is much better than it. Levar mebisra. Now, he's a man who obviously was partial to meat. So he says, Takya, all kinds of foods.
Except.
Okay, except. You know, an egg is better than that. But if you have meat, and it's the size of a kibbutz, that's already better than an egg.
So, mevushalta comes from the word
mevushal,
the boil, the boil of wine.
Right, exactly. It's the same word. Right.
I see.
Okay. All right, so since they already spoke about that, now we continue. The Mishnah, if you remember, it said, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva said that afilo ochal shalom. If you ate only boiled vegetables, but what did Rabbi Akiva felt? He felt that you had to give the full benching afterwards, because he says, if this is what you're eating, and you know it's enough to satisfy your hunger,
then you should bench.
And you feel that you're getting nourishment, you know, enough nourishment out of it, then in that case you should bench. This is what he said. So, the Gemara wants to know, tell me, is there anything at all which when you boil it, meaning of course, you know, a vegetable, if you boil it, that it actually gives you enough nourishment? So Rav Ashi, yeah, he says, it's bekelach shel kruv shonu. Yeah, he says, that supplies to a stalk of cabbage. If you would eat a cabbage stalk, you'll find that it gives you a lot of nourishment.
Also a lot of gas.
A lot of gas, too. Right. But of course, they were talking about cooked cabbage. There's another passage in another place in the Gemara where they speak about the difference in the bracha that you make between eating raw cabbage and eating cooked cabbage.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But cooked cabbage, they say you make the bracha b'ori pri v'adam.
Cooked cabbage?
Cooked cabbage, right. Because that was their method of preparation. They felt that this was best for me to prepare it that way, okay? Whereas, if you ate raw cabbage, they said, and in that particular case, you don't say b'ori pri v'adam, instead say shakol d'yibidvaro.
Why?
Why? Because they felt this was not the normal way of eating it. This is what they felt. Now, since it was, we have different ideas, then in that case we should say b'ori pri v'adam.
It seems that in a raw state it's more b'ori pri v'adam than it is boiled.
From our point of view, because we're already used to eating, you know, raw cabbage, but they were not. The chances are they may have been afraid to eat raw cabbage because it would repeat on them much more so than even the boiled cabbage.
No, I was thinking that would be the explanation, that they would think that it would be shakoni before all because you would be eating the flies and the bugs and the worms that were crawling.
Well, you're not supposed to,
I hope everybody had a good
You summer. Know that. You know, you're supposed to take cabbage leaves, examine them carefully, wash them, and so on and so forth to make sure there are no buggies and worms over
That's
there.
That's why the people in the Muncie don't eat
That's why they wanted to be even careful and go control it because they knew there would be.
Right. There are people in Eretz Yisrael and people in Borough Park and so on who will not
but
eat any of the leafy vegetables.
Excuse me, but that is so not the major food. It would be the secondary food. Yeah. The cabbage would be the first food then. And you got to make the broth that prevails, right?
That's not a point.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
You do have a point.
But there's no bracha for eating a worm.
why are they making a shakol? Why are they making a shakol?
You know, if you're going so far as to cook the cabbage,
you might as well make it.
I have to remember, you know, that you don't make a bracha for something which is unavailing. That's not right, okay?
There's no bracha for bacon.
All right. So, we see over here, first of all, the Rav Ashi speaks in praise of cabbage. He says that cabbage, if you cook it, so with the taka, you know, it gives you strength. And it makes you feel that you've eaten some substantial food. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. So, as long as they're talking about that, they talk about other foods too. Tachol, this is what we usually call the spleen, but some translate it as milt, you know, it's
milt.
Some of these words.
Milt.
Milt, right. Some of these people, some of the commentaries, they have different ways of translating some of the words here. So anyway, what about this? He says, Yofel Shinayim, this is good for the teeth, but caution within Beyayim, but it's hard on your intestines. In other words, it's very good to chew with it, right? Probably will give you sparkling teeth. Though remember, they didn't have Colgates in those days.
Getting a medical education.
Right.
How do you like that?
Look, they were aware of many medical facts.
Of course. Absolutely
true.
Where did the Rambam get his medical knowledge?
Of course. And they also studied, you know, not only the text in the Gemara, let's say, that have to deal with medical advice. Nutritionist leeks. In other words, they're members of the onion family. Okay? Somebody translated it as beans. I don't know. That's not the usual translation.
Here they call them horse beans.
Yeah, horse beans.
Horse beans?
I don't know what a horse bean is.
I don't do.
Must be a large bean.
But that's not the usual translation. Usually translated as leeks.
Right.
So what about them? It says they're kosher lashinayim, they're kind of tough to chew with your teeth, but it says but they're very good for clearing your intestines. They'll keep you regular.
What's the word for intestines?
B'nei me'ayim.
Me'ayim
by itself already means the intestines, but usually they use the expression b'nei me'ayim. That's a nicer expression. Meaning the intestines. But sometimes, by the way, it also refers to the womb, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sometimes they use that expression, and they are, you know, into instead of saying, you know,
the womb.
The right, the womb. So, okay.
Cataract.
But the meaning of it obviously means intestines. Okay. In other words, it's good for your regularity. Now, called Yerek Chai, what if you eat raw vegetables? So it says Morik. You know what it does? It makes your face turn green, or your complexion turn green.
It's interesting.
Yeah. The whole cotton, matin. And if you eat anything which is cotton, now by cotton, as Rashi explains, cotton, he says, means that it is not fully developed. Okay, you eat something which is still unripe or not fully developed.
Oh, cotton means small. So.
Right, right. In the sense that it has not attained its maturity. Then matin, then you yourself will become small as a result of it. In other words, it doesn't give you much nourishment for growth. Okay? The chol nefesh, and anything which is nefesh, and in this case, again, Rashi explains that nefesh means it's alive, exactly, right? So, neshiv is a nefesh. We're talking now, he says, well, alright, we'll see what they're talking about. So, anything which is alive, it restores yourself. But we'll see what kind of alive things he's talking about, okay? The chol korov la nefesh, and whatever is near to the nefesh, that means, in other words, actually, to the area where the shechita, you know, is done, and the nefesh, you know, the soul of the behemoth departs. So the closer you get to that part of the anatomy, you know, of the animal that you're eating, so meshiv is hanefesh. It will restore your own soul. In other words, this is the healthiest part of the animal as far as your own needs are concerned. Kruv says cabbage, that's the muslim, that's very good as providing nourishing food. Okay, the tardin is translated variously. Israel today, if you speak about tera means spinach. Okay, others say that it means beets. Tardin. Okay,
what does your book say?
Beets.
Yeah. But as I say, in Eretz Israel, the word tera tardin, I mean, it refers to spinach. At any rate, he says, Lifuwa. He says, this is good for healing you for whatever ails you. Okay? Right. So I guess Popeye had something, you know. Or your mother, when she said, you better eat your spinach or else.
Lifuwa.
All right. So it's good for Lifuwa. And Oilo Levias, he says, and woe unto the. Now, we would all think that the word bias over here means house or home, right? That's not what Rashi says.
What does Rashi say?
Rashi says it means the stomach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Woe unto the stomach, he says, she'alefes overes besocha, where turnips pass through. Okay. In other words, turnips are kind of hard to digest, and probably they're also gassy.
Very gassy.
So, as a result, woe unto your stomach if this is what you keep on eating.
You cook them, they get soft.
Yeah,
they're still gassy.
But we're talking about overdoing it. Okay. All right, so now, talking along the same lines of Amar, another, you know, teacher taught that chol yofel l'shinayim, right? That the spleen or the milk is good for your teeth, for koshnei meyayim. So it says, maitakante. All right, if it provides difficulty, you know, it says it's not good for your intestines, right? So how can you fix it up so it won't? So he says, nilatzei v'nishadye. Okay, he says, chew upon it. You know, chew this milk, right? Spleen, whatever it is, and then throw it out. Okay? So that way you get the nourishment, you know,
for your teeth.
Right.
But you don't,
it's good for your teeth, and also, you know, you get enough nourishment out of the juices or whatever it may be, but that way the meat will not hurt you. All right. Krishan, coming back again to the other thing that we said, the leeks, okay? Where we said that koshen and shinayim, they're difficult for your teeth, and the often and nevayim, but they're good for your intestines, so maitakante. What do you do in order to take care of that? So he says, the shalkinhu and of the inhu. Okay? Boil it, and then swallow it. If you do that, then not only is it good for your teeth, but it won't hurt your intestines either. Kol yerek chai, and how about raw vegetables, where it said that it's morik, it causes your complexion to turn green. So Omer Rabbi Yitzchok said, b'seuda rishayna shel achar hakozet, says this applies only if you would first have your blood let, hakozet, you know, that's the old business like shtelling bankers that they used to do, that for medical reasons they would draw blood, right, through leeches, whatever it may be. So then you have to eat some food afterwards in order to get a little vitality. So he says, don't eat a raw vegetable for that meal. Okay? But otherwise, in the Shkafelach, okay?
That's what Rabbi Yitzchak said. The Yomer Rabbi Yitzchak. And Rabbi Yitzchak also says, in connection with the vegetables, he says, Kol ho'echa yerek koidim arba shoz, osu l'sapeimen. He says, anybody who eats raw vegetables earlier than the fourth hour of the day, in other words, earlier than 10 o'clock, right? So, osu l'sapeim. Actually, I don't know if he means earlier than 10 o'clock or if he means earlier than 9 o'clock, because the question is he talking about the beginning of the fourth hour or the end of the fourth hour? It doesn't specify over here. But at any rate, it says if you eat vegetables prior to that time, then also the supper a minute, then don't talk with him. Why? Because my tama, what's the reason? He says mishum reifa, because there will be the smell of the vegetables emanating from his mouth. Remember, they didn't use scope, they didn't use Listerine, they didn't have these things in those days, okay? So they felt that if you eat raw vegetables, it's liable to give you a good odor.
Like onion.
Right, and like onions, exactly, or garlic or something garlic, like that, yeah. Right? Eat some nice raw garlic first thing in the morning, and
throw up and sure.
People will not be happy talking yeah. to you.
Wow. They had some diet then. They had some diet.
So now,
things they ate.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
A neymar, yeah, right. It's interesting to see this picture.
Yeah.
A neymar, mazutra, rabashi. These three great rabbis, a neymar, mazutra, and rabashi, hoyu yatsme. They were sitting, going to have breakfast together. Okay. Aisuk and mayhu yerek chai kodem arbashos. And what happened? So they brought before them raw vegetables, and this was before the fourth hour, okay? Ameim or Rav Ashi ochel. So Ameim or Rav Ashi, they ate. They didn't ask any kashas, but they ate. Mazutra lo yochel. But Mazutra didn't eat. So Amulei, so they said unto him, my datech, what opinion are you following? Amar Rav Yitzchak, koloechel yerek kodem abba shoz, also the sapeh minu. The fact that Rav Yitzchak said that whoever eats, you know, raw vegetables before the fourth hour, you shouldn't talk to him. Mishum Reicho, because of the odor that emanates from him. Ho'anan, look at us, he says. We ate. Because Mishtayim V'Hadon, at the same time we're talking. We're talking to each other, we're talking to you. And there's nothing wrong with it. So Amaluhu, so he said unto them, you know, Anoki Idach Rabbi Yitzchak. Says, I follow, I'm more concerned about the other statement that Rabbi Yitzchak made, spirally. You know, I follow his opinion, the Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, because when Rabbi Yitzchak said, also the Yodam Sheyochad Yerek Chai Kedem Abba Shois, right? That's one thing, okay? So, I'm afraid, he says, you know, to disobey what Rabbi Yitzchak had to say. In other words, Rabbi Yitzchak says, don't eat, so I don't eat. You're looking for a reason, you say that's because of the odor. No, so chalpnish. So, but nevertheless, I don't have to tell you, I mean, in this particular case, there's no halacha that's involved. And if you feel like eating raw vegetables before the fourth hour, meg, okay. And I don't have to point out to you, right, that in Eretz Yisrael, kinyan hora, our breakfast, which includes tomatoes and cucumbers and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Olives. Nobody worries about it.
I want to make the broth.
Right. Now, kol cotton martin. Then another thing that he said is what? That anything which is immature, as we've translated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it causes you also to suffer, you know, it doesn't give you the nourishment that you should in order to grow. Omer Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda said, afilu gadya bazuza. He says this applies to a gadya, you know, a little goat, right?
Mm-hmm.
A kid, which you can buy for a zuz. Of course, the one that we had for Pesach was worth more, right? That was the Zavon Habo Bisrei
was
one
for two,
right? So this
two
one
zuzi,
is this was a younger one, all right. But he says, well, I'm moron, but you know where it applies? El Deleis Be Riva. It applies where the animal has only attained a quarter of its growth. Of all, isbe rivo, but once it has attained a quarter of its growth, then in that case, less longbo. Then we don't worry about it, we're not concerned about it. called nefesh, meishiv nefesh. All right, remember it said before that anything which is like life, a living creature, it restores your soul. Now, of course, we know that in general we're not allowed to eat life living creatures, right? So Rav Papa said, you know what they're referring to? He says, afilu gildenei devei gilei. He says, this applies even to like little sardines. That's what it refers to, because a sardine, you know, you can eat a whole sardine, and you know, it's good for you. So
alive,
they know,
huh? Alive,
alive, if you wish.
Like okay. The college boys used to eat a lot
of the goldfish, of course. Yeah. But actually, nefesh they translate not so much live; they really translate nefesh in this particular case as you know, whole, the entire thing. Okay. So a sardine, I mean, I don't like to eat the tail of the sardine, but otherwise there's nothing wrong with it. So anyway, that he recommends. All right. Then it says, Kol ha-korov le-nefesh, meishiv es ha-nefesh. Anything which is near the soul, literally, restores the soul. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, you know what they're talking about? They're talking about unko. Unko is the neck in this particular case, okay? It's related to the Hebrew word anak. Not giant, but anak in the sense also like the neck bone, okay?
But it's not sure for us to eat anything that's alive, right? I mean,
of course, we're not allowed to.
Goldfish,
it's written in the first pages of the Torah, we're not allowed to. No question about that. Yeah, so that's why nefesh, you know, we don't really mean alive, but we were talking about, you know, something which is whole, okay? Let's take a look for a moment at what Rashi has to say about gildenei devei gilei, these little fish, okay?
Where are we?
Yeah. Gildenei devei gilei, if you go up about four or five lines in the Rashi, you'll see gildenei devei gilei. You see it over there? So he explains, what are these? He says, these are dogim ketanim, they're tiny fish.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Right. Dogim ketanim el. He says, they're very tiny fish. Umitsuyin, and they hang out, he says, bein hakonim ba'agan, among the reeds in a pond. The ein darken ligdol yoser, and they are not going to grow any larger. Aval, but Rashi says, dog koton mimin dog godol. If it is only a tiny fish or a fish that grows, you know, bigger, the logo del rova, but it has not grown at least a quarter of the normal size, then zehu katan makdin, then this would also apply. Understand? So this is what Rashi is saying, that in case a fish, something like that, or even an animal, as we said before, the gedi, you know, the kid, if it has not attained yet a quarter of its normal growth, don't eat it, because it'll cause you to grow smaller. But once it has attained at least a quarter of its normal growth, then you can use it. All right. Unko, it says, Rashi explains this, Sabar. This is the neck. Makom beis hashvita. This is the place where you shecht it. The somach lalev alamayev. Not only that, but this area is also close to the heart, and also to the kishkes at the end. So, in other words, this is what the part that they would recommend for your health, okay? Omale Rava Lishami. Rava said to his shamas, he says, Ki maises li umtso de visra. If you bring me literally a steak of meat or a piece of meat, right? Today they use the word umtso in the sense of a steak or a chop or something like that, okay? That's the modern use of the word. But here it means, all right, if you buy and you bring me a piece of meat, it says, Terach ba'aisili me'hechod me'kor levei borah. It says, make the effort, Terach, and bring me from that area which is near to the place where you have to say, Boruch ha'tor Hashem l'kem l'kei lo'amar, Shevet Shom t'savet t'ivono, al ha'shchita. In other words, that's the area that, you know, the law of shchita applies to. Then we said kruv lemozon, right? That cabbage is good for food, for nourishment, but tardin, and as I said before, either it means spinach or it means beets, that's good for refuah. Okay. prove the Muslim in the Defu Allah? So now they ask the question, you mean that cabbage is good for food, but it's not good for healing whatever is wrong with you? The whole Tanya, didn't we learn that Shisha Devarim Merapin is Achela Mechol Yom? There are six things that can cure a sick person from his illness, Refuason Refua, and they really help, they really provide proper Refua, right? So what are they? The Elohe. This is what they are. Kruv, so this is mentioned, you know, that it's good for Refua, right?
Mm-hmm.
The cabbage, not only that, but cardon, of course, as we said before, namely the spinach or the beets, if you wish. Umay Sisin, this is a good question, exactly what it means. And also the next word, Davash, is a question, because if you take a look in the right column over there, they say that it should really be Yovesh. In other words, dry Meisisin. The only problem is, what is Meisisin? So there are those who translate, take a look at Rashi, all he says is that it's a Tavshin Shel Puliol. The only question is, what does Puliol mean? So apparently it's some sort of a...
bird.
No. Yeah, and no. If it were really French, I mean that, you know, like modern French, then poulet is actually, it's poultry.
Mm.
Okay? It's poultry. So maybe it's taka, that's what it means. In other words, a dry piece of chicken or something like that would be good. Although it would seem to me that the chicken soup may be even better, I don't know. However, there is a different opinion as to what this means. There are those who say that Meisisin is actually... it's a liquid compounded from what they call chamomile. Do you know what chamomile is?
It's a tea.
It's a tea, exactly.
Yeah,
in France, they go crazy over it. They consider it as very good for indigestion and for helping you sleep at night and things like that.
Kind of a chamomile tea. Kind of like a sedative.
Yeah, right. In France, as I say, they swear by it, okay? So at any rate, they consider it also being very good for you. As a medication. The kava, another thing that's good for you, would be the maw, in other words, the stomach of the animal. The heres, would be literally the womb, according to one, according to others, it means some other part of the anatomy. And finally, the yoseres hakovi, the lobe on the liver. Naturally, you have to broil it first, but after you've broiled it, then the yoseres hakovi is also good for you to eat. Eloheimo. So if that's the case, since we have this tradition, so I have to say, kruv ap lebaza. In other words, that cabbage is good also for food, besides being good for refuah. Then he says, if you remember the text said, oilo lebayis, woe unto the stomach, shehalefes oberes besochi, right, where the turnips go coursing through it, right? Eini, isn't this so? V'omalei rova neshomi, didn't rova say to his Shamas, who's attendance, he says, Ki Chazisa, Lifta Bishuka, he says, when you see turnips in the marketplace, Lo Semalibimai Krachta Rifta, don't even ask me, you know, what should I get in order to make a sandwich with the. So, in other words, this is so good that bring me home some turnips so I can eat it together with my bread.
Mm.
Okay? Omar Abaye. But Abaye said, you know, when is it good? It's mibli basar, if you eat it without meat. But Rava Omar mibli yain. Rava said, it's good if you eat it without wine. Itmar, we have learned also that Rav Omar mibli basar, Shmuel Omar mibli eitzer. Rav said that it's good if you eat it without meat. And Shmuel said, it's good if you eat it without firewood. In other words, you don't cook it too long. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Rabbi Yochanan said, it's good if you eat it without wine. So Amalei Rav La Papa says sudni, and sudni we don't know exactly again what is the exact meaning of this word. One translation is Rashi's. Rashi says means Baal Shechar tomorrow. In other words, he was a manufacturer of liquor which was made out of dates. This is Shechar tomorrow. So that's one translation. On the side, you will see that the Orach, which is one of the ancient dictionaries, the oldest dictionary in the Hebrew language, goes back to the early Middle Ages.
He explained it that Sunni means a Yirei Shemayim, or God-fearing man. Okay? Mm-hmm. At any rate, either it means his profession, he's calling by his profession, or he's calling him, you know, a great Talmud Chacham, or a pious person. He says, Ananta Binlei Bivisu Vechamra. He says, you know, what we do with these things. On the contrary, we literally break, in other words, we take away the sharpness of this, the ill effect that it might have, by serving it together with meat and wine. Do that, and that takes away, you know, whatever bad qualities there are. Atun, he says, you guys, he says, you don't have much wine available where you live, so b'may tabritu, what do you do in order to, you know, mitigate, you know, to take away the harshness of the food? So he says, Omale, you know what we do? He says, Bitsive, what we do is to add more firewood. The more we cook it, that helps, you know, to take away whatever bad qualities there are. Kihod it is for the Rav Papa, as we find in the case of the wife of Rav Papa, Bosa de Bavashla lo Tavra lo Bitan Bitmanin Ufi Parsayas. Says, after she cooked it, she would then take away the bad qualities by cooking it even more in 80 pieces of Persian wood. Exactly what it is, but apparently there's some kind of a tree that grew over there, and they had firewood over there that was available easily, so by cooking it more, that's how they did away with whatever bad qualities they made.
This is tartine. Food are we talking
about? Yeah, I'm talking about the lettuce, for example. You know, the turnip. The turnips, right. It's hard for you, so he says if you cook it a lot, takes it away. Or if you mix it, you serve it with meat and wine and so on, also it's good, you know. Then
But since they don't have a lot of wine in that area, right.
But since they don't, so he says cook it more. Okay. Tana Rabba. Sages have a tradition that they said, Kotan Maliach, it says, a small salted piece of fish, the Omim Shehu Memis, there are times when it will kill you. When? The Shiva. If it's the seventh day, I assume after the seventh day after it's been caught, or the Shiva Asar, or on the 17th day, or the Esrim Shiva, or on the 27th day. The Amri Lo, and there are those who say also be Esrim Mishlosh on the 23rd day. But, Velo Amorn, Eleba Motui, Velo Motui. But you know what we're talking about? We're talking about where it was roasted and not roasted. In other words, it was only partly
cooked.
Avol Motui, Shapir, but if you cook it well, then Leslan Bon, we don't worry about it. So that's perfectly okay. Udelo Motui, Shapir, but if it is not cooked well, then he says, "Lo amoron, we do not say this. Elo dele shoso basre shichra. That's where you didn't drink any strong drink after it. Aval shoso basre shichra less than one. But if you have a good drink after you've eaten this fish, then don't worry. The schnapps or the beer, whatever it is, the wine, it'll take care of it and do away with all the ill effects." And now we're going down the home stretch over here of this chapter. The Hashesa Maimet Sama. We learned that if a person drinks water because he is thirsty, then of course he has to make the Baruch HaShakal near the Dvorah, right? But what happens if not? So this is what the Gemara wants to know. Lafuke Mai. So what does this exclude? When don't we make a Baruch before we drink water? So he says, Lafuke. So Omer Avidi Barov, and he says La Puke, this is to exclude Leman Vechanakte Umsa. If a guy is choking on a piece of meat, in other words, I don't mean the Heimdich maneuver, but you know, he's having trouble swallowing it because it's too dry, then in that case, if he drinks water in order to aid the chewing process, then he doesn't have to make a brother for the water. And finally, if you remember, there was a difference of opinion as to what bracha do we make. We said shakal near the boro, but Rabbi Tarfin came along and he said, no, the bracha that you say before you drink water is
burn
the foshes. So Omalei Rava bar Rav Chonon Abaye,
So Rabba, the son of Rabchanan, said to Abayu, says, V'yamrodo Rabbi Yosef. There are those who say that this was the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. Hilchus Omai, what is the halacha, what is the din? Omalei, and he said unto him, Hu kaze my amadabar, go out and see what the people are doing. What are the people are doing? The people are making a bracha, shahakoni adivoro, beforehand, right? And then they make a bracha very nefoshes rabbis afterwards, and that way they satisfy everybody, and the Sholem al Yisrael. Okay.
Consensus.
Thank you very much.
We're now
finished now the sixth chapter, and we're ready to begin chapter seven. Next week. Yes, Asha.
We're okay. Now on the top of Memhei.
Yeah.
Memhei.
Right. Okay.
Olive.
Right. Okay. As you heard in the tape, we're now ready to begin. A week has passed, and now we're ready to begin. Okay. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah, new chapter. Well, first of all, let me just say a couple of words of introduction before we start this. Do you remember in the chapter which we just finished, Kesa Nevorchim, we were, for the most part, concerned with what kind of brachas do you make before this, that, or the other thing? And we saw that what the chapter did was to create various kinds of categories in order to tell us what the proper bracha should be. So that, for example, for bread, you should have to say Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz, even though it is something that came from the earth. And we might have thought, you know, that we should say simply Bori Pri Ha'adama, but no, we don't do that, okay? Because bread is important. So we learn a bracha Bori Pri Ha'adama for things that grow from the ground and normally. Generally, but when it comes to bread, it has its own bracha. The same thing we learned, that whereas Bori Pri Ha'etz is okay in general, you know, for fruits that grow on trees, even including grapes, as we discovered, right? But nevertheless, when it came to wine, so in that particular case, it deserved a bracha all by itself because of the importance of wine, so therefore, in that case, you'll say Bori Pri Hagot. Okay. And then, of course, we learned, you know, when do we say Shahakol? And we also touched upon other types of brachos, which are said before something. I'm thinking in terms of, for example, Birchos HaReach. In other words, when you smell something, where the general bracha is Gori Minim Mitzamim, but as we saw, there are also special categories as well. As, for example, Borei Shemen Oreth, and we praise God for having created fragrant olive oil. Or we have that bracha that we learned, a very beautiful one, a bracha that we recite when we see the trees blossoming in the month of Nisan for the first time. And we praise God for the fact that He created this world in beauty and left nothing out of it. So He created everything within this universe so that we could enjoy it, and so on. So these were just some of the things that we learned. We also learned, you know, so, of course, Bar Min Mazonas was another category that we learned, you know, brachas that we have to make. It also touched upon what kind of brachas do we make following, you know, after we have eaten something, okay? After we've been drunk something. So as we saw, in general, they fall into two categories. Either it falls into the category of you know, the bracha which they called Me'ein Shalosh. In other words, it's like the equivalent, or it contains a digest of the Birkas HaMazon. This is the bracha that we learn, you know, they have to say after eating, for example, fruits for which Eretz Yisrael is praised, or for eating cakes, cookies, and so on, you know, made out of the five species of grain which Eretz Yisrael is praised for, and so on, okay? Or after drinking wine. So that is the bracha Me'ein Shalosh. We also learned, incidentally, I mean, not in the text, but we learned that, for example, if you have a slice of pizza, you say Bori Minim Mitzvotis beforehand, and then you say Alam Bichvi Al Kakola afterwards. Okay, so that's one of the things that we learned to say afterwards. And then we learned, of course, what is the all-purpose bracha that you make after eating things such as
eggs, flesh, fish, and so on and so forth, anything in reality which does not grow from the ground itself. So you say burn the fashions. And then you also learned incidentally that there are certain things, like for example, something which is made out of rice, we learned that you do say burn minimum zonas beforehand, but you say shakal nidadori afterwards. Okay? So that falls into a category of its own, simply because it is mazon, it is food which sustains the human being, but at the same time, since it was not included among the grains for which Eretz Yisrael is praised, therefore it's not proper to say Allah be al kol afterwards, but burn the fashos.
Oh, yeah, because
now.
you said the shakal.
Right. So these are some of the things that we learned, in connection with prophets. We also learned, that there are certain things, for example, where we make a bracha beforehand, but there is no bracha made afterwards. Among that we learned are, for example, the brachas of the mitzvah, whereas we know you make a bracha lahadik ner shel Shabbos, lahadik ner shel Chanukah, or alatilas lulav, or whatever it may be, right. But you don't make a bracha after. Well, for the Torah we do have. We have a bracha before we read, and then a bracha after we read. Okay, that of course we had yet back in the first chapter of Prophets. Okay. Then we learned also that, for example, for Reichone, in other words, you say Bori Menim Besomim, right? But you don't have to make a bracha after that, after you've smelled it, you see. That's not required, only before you smell. So that we had all kinds of different categories of brachas. This chapter deals specifically with Birkas HaMazon, the grace after meals, and the first problem that they want to discuss is at what point do you have to feel that you are part of a group eating together, which requires a special introduction. So that this is what the first Mishnah now is going to deal with. Okay? Mishnah begins by saying, Shlosha she'ochlu ki'achas. If three people eat as one, in other words, they eat together, okay? Chayovin lizami, then they are required to have zimun. Now, of course, what we mean by zimun? By zimun, we mean that one person says to the two others, Nivoreich she'ochal le'mishalo, and they have to answer, right, and then Boruch Shachal Mishalo, and so on, okay? The Boruch Shachal Mishalo has to say, let us praise God, let us praise Him of whose bounty we are feeding, which is what, the bracha means, and so on. Okay, so that's the first thing. All right, so Shlosha Sheyochlu Ki'achas, if three people sit down together in order to eat, then in that particular case, they have to begin the Birkas HaMazon by saying Nivoreich, let us bless God of whose bounty we have eaten. Okay. Now, the Mishnah continues and says, Ochal demai, Maaseh Rishon, Shenifta Trumosoi, Maaseh Sheni VeHekdei Shenifta, VaHashamish Ochal Kezayis, VeYakusi. Alright. Now the Mishnah gives various categories where you can count people even though they are doing somewhat different things at the meal itself, but if they're sitting together and eating, you can count them to as what we would call a mezuzah. Alright, so what are these different terms? Okay, demai. Demai, of course, means that we're not altogether certain whether the whether the miser has been taken from it. We don't know whether, the tithe that should have been taken from it was taken and given to the lady. Alright, so that's one thing. Now, what would happen, therefore, if somebody, had sat down to eat, okay, and he was eating that type of food, the mai, that were not altogether certain, and the other two were eating, food that they know everything is kosher v'yosher, okay, no questions about it. Point then is that they could add him to the mizuman, even though he's not eating exactly the same thing as what they are eating. Okay? Now, the same thing is also true as far as Maaseh Rishon, Shenifta Trumosoi. Maaseh Rishon, as we said, this is given to the lady. Okay? Remember that there are three tithes. Maaseh Rishon, is the tithe, but you give 10% to the lady. Okay? Maaser Sheni, this is where you take a tenth, you know, of then, you know, what you've subtracted, and you take that to Yerushalayim in order to eat it over there. Okay? Now, the law is, of course, that Maaser Sheni or Hekdesh. Hekdesh is something that you say, I dedicate this to the temple. Now, you're not allowed to use anything that you dedicate to the temple unless you redeem it. If you redeem it and you pay an additional fifth of value, Chamishiso, Yosef Olov, as it's written, then in that particular case, then it is no longer Hekdesh, and you're permitted to eat it. Naturally, you have redeemed it from Hekdesh, okay? Of course, the money that, you know, it is worth, plus the additional 20% valuation, this has to be given, you know, to the gizbor, to the person who's collecting, the Kohen, who's collecting for the Beis HaMikdash, okay? Maaser Rishon, we learned over there that this is given to the Levi. But the Levi also has an obligation, and that is that he has to take a small percentage of what has been given to him in the form of Maaser and give that to the Kohen. This is called Trumas Maaser. Okay? So that he has to give to the Kohen. Mm-hmm. Now, what would happen then if a Levi is sitting at the table, right, and he's eating Maaser Rishon, which only a Levi can eat, and he has taken the trouble to, you know, to give to the Kohen that 2% that he's required to give to the Kohen. Okay? Then in that particular case, he can be added to the Mezumin because he's eating what is probably food for him, even if the other two people, you know, are not Kohanim, not Levim, and, you know, they're eating whatever they're eating over there. Okay. Now, with Maaser Sheni, we have the following law in the Torah. It's written over there that, you know, you are to take the this tithe and go up to Yerushalayim and eat it over there. But what would happen if, by the time that you have to go to Yerushalayim, the fruit is liable to spoil? Then in that case, you redeem it. How do you redeem it? Yeah, so you sell it on the market, and the money that you got from the sale of it, this has to be put aside, as the Torah says, that you have to tie it up into a bundle, and then you take it in your hand, and you bring it up to Yerushalayim, and of course there, it has to be used in order to buy produce, so that you can fulfill the idea of eating and rejoicing before God, which is the law, you know, as far as Maaser Sheni is concerned. You have to spend it on food, on wine, and so on, you know, this is what you have to spend it on. Okay? So, a person did not get up to Yerushalayim yet. But what has he done with his Maaser Sheni? He has redeemed it, right, and put aside the money. In that case, then this food is perfectly permissible to him. So, as you notice, what is the common denominator that we see?
The redeeming part of it?
Well, to a certain extent. Uh-huh. But the point is that each one, no matter how different they may be, that one is a Kohen, another one is a Levi,
they
and
can
so
eat
on.
Together. And
they can eat together because they have done what is proper
according to law.
Far,
mm-hmm.
Right, according to the law for the food that they're eating. Okay? This is really what the common denominator is at this particular point. Now, they add two other people. All right? One is Hashabbos. All right, we all know what a shamash is. Right. But in reality, the shamash in those days was the term which was used in order to mean a person who was serving food. Okay? That's the original meaning of the word shamash. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, there's a man serving food, and he eats at least a kezias worth of food together with another two people who are sitting over there at the table. So in that particular case, what can they do?
They can bench together.
Right, they can bench together, right.
As a mezumin.
So as a mezumin, exactly. Of course, we'll see, you know, a little bit later that, but this is how the Mishnah stands right now, okay? And the last category is the most interesting one, and that is Hakusi. Now, if you remember from the Gemara in Kedushin that we learned about
what
the Kusim.
Hakusim?
Yes, who were the Kusim? Remember them?
Yeah.
They were the Samaritans, right?
Yeah.
They were the Samaritans who were this. They settled in northern Israel in the area, you know, that they call Shomron, right?
And they're the ones that only believe in the written Torah.
Correct. And at the same time, they have also some ideas of their own, so that, as we learned in the Gemara and Kedushin, they were suspected of being only partly Jewish. In other words, outwardly they were Jewish, but at the same time they also suspected them of still retaining in secret idolatrous practices, so that the Kusi was not wholly accepted as a Jew. Nevertheless, we also learned in the Gemara and Kedushin, and it's repeated in several other places in the Talmud, that if a Kusi observes a law, then very often they observe it even more carefully than the ordinary Jew observes it. So in this particular case, we have to assume then that the Kusi too, he knows his Torah, he has studied his Torah, and naturally, what is this all based upon? It's all based upon the fact that the Torah tells us, V'yochalto, V'savoto, right? You shall eat, you shall be satisfied with what you've eaten, and then V'rapto, Hashem l'kefa. So the Kusi also knows that Pasuk, and therefore he too wants to bench as well. He wants to express his gratitude to God. So that being the case, therefore, if you had two 100% Jews and you also had a Kusi over there, the Kusi could be added to the Mezumah. Okay? So that's what it says. So the Hakusi, right? Hashem is your Chalkezayas, the Hakusi Mezumah.
In this case, he's accepted.
Right. You can accept them for the Mezumah, whether it's the person who is serving the meal, as long as he's eaten a minimum amount of food, the Kezayas, or the Kusi, who even were suspicious of the extent of his Yiddishkeit, but nevertheless, he also, because of the fact that here is a mitzvah where we are certain that they too want to fulfill.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Could you count the Kusi to a million if you had nine people and you had a Kusi?
That is already a more difficult question. I'll tell you why it's a more difficult question. Because according to what we have learned, tefillah is, strictly speaking, it's more midah rabbanan than it is in the Torah. The Torah doesn't exactly tell us that we must daven. But, of course, the whole weight of tradition is that we have to. As we learned before, that, for example, the various Shemoneh Esrei, Shacharis, Mincha, Maariv, these already, we said, our fathers observed, the forefathers. Abraham was the one who ordained Shacharis, and Yitzchak Mincha, and Yaakov Maariv, right? And, of course, then the Chachamim came along, and they said also there was a relation between that and between the sacrifices that were offered up in the Beis HaMikdash. Remember that, okay? So that is the reason why, the time of Shacharis, the time of Mincha and so on, is to correspond to times when offerings were made in the Beis HaMikdash. This is why we also have a Musaf prayer that we add on Shabbos and on Yom Tov and on Shkodesh, those days when the Torah tells us that we have to. And there was also a discussion of, the time that's involved over there as well. One opinion, that of the Chacham, saying you could say Musaf all day long, and that of Rabbi Yehuda said you could only say it through the seventh hour, which would mean, in other words, until 1 o'clock in the afternoon approximately, okay? And in this particular case, we're more machmir to follow the system of Rabbi Yehuda. So unless you're in the shul where they drain, 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 drain.
So in this case, what you're saying is that he could not be counted to the minyan because he doesn't believe in the rabbinical ordination.
Exactly. If he doesn't follow rabbinic, he only follows, what is written in his version of the Torah, then in that particular case, he would not be counted. Okay? In other words, in order to be counted to a mezumen, you have to be at least on a position of equality. okay, with the other people who were there in that particular case, okay?
It's kind of a hairy, kind of a very thin line there.
Well, I mean, but you realize, I mean, what is the basic factor, you see, which underlines this? So if you don't want to use the word factor, I mean, what is the
basic principle
that's involved over here, right? Since they don't observe laws of the Rabbanon, so that therefore cannot suspect that they're going to do it. Exactly. Right. If they're not eligible to do it, in that particular case, we cannot count them.
Benching is a Torah command.
Right. Benching is a Torah command because it says so specifically. Exactly. Right. Of course, our sages also came along, as we learned also previously, I mean, that they say, you know, Nishma Yisrael, where we say, V'hoyim Shemon Tishma Tzisai, you know, if you will observe my commandments, Hashem Anoichi V'tzavetz V'mayom, right? Li'ahavu es HaRishem L'keichem V'chol L'vavichem V'chol Nafshechem. To love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, right? So they say, how can you serve God with all your heart? So the answer is, this is, Eza Avodo Shebalev, what is the service of God in your heart? The answer is Zutfilah. This is by prayer. So whether the Kusim also would accept that rabbinic interpretation, I don't know. But essentially, it is a rabbinic interpretation.
It raises questions about all things to serve, ritual.
But if Mila is one that they practice rigorously,
well, because that is a commandment in the Torah.
Yeah. So that would be the status, you know, as far as accepting or non-accepting what the Kusim. But as we see over here, when it came to benching with the Mezuvin, they're willing to accept the Kusi as well.